Bob in the morning, everybody, and welcome to Popcorn Culture. As always, I am your one true host, Jazzy J, joined as usual by my brother, the one true co-host, Buzzy Benjamin B.
Hey,
what's happening?
Back again.
3 weeks in a row, man.
I feel like you really lingered on the as ever.
I really wanted people to just always.
It's like underlined, bold, italics.
This is how it is. You know?
Yeah.
Right.
But then here's me with the strike through.
Yeah.
You know, strike through is one of those keyboard commands that it's like, it just seems like control B, control I, you know, I don't think strike through is just control S.
No, I don't know. Yeah, what is Control S?
I don't know.
I don't either.
It's certainly not strike through.
Yeah, no.
I don't think so. Maybe it is.
Like, wait a minute, is it that easy?
I feel like I've tried.
Well, because here's like in an old school Microsoft Word, they would put three buttons at the top, and it was italic, bold, and underline. And these were apparently the only text effects Microsoft thought you needed on the ready. They were like, what would you need strike through for? Just backspace it. Like, why would you need to write it and demonstrate that you didn't want it there?
I think, you know, and it's funny because I think forever and ever, I would have had zero usage for strike through.
Well, maybe you would have though, if it was just a default option.
Well, what I was going to say though, is I think like as text-based communication evolves, mm-hmm. It's like, it's interesting how you can like add, you know, like comedic timing or inflection or tone, yes, via like these types, yeah, of like little things, you know? So like a lot of times if I'm describing like an action, you know, like hides behind desk or whatever, it's a very like italics kind of moment, yeah, mm-hmm, you know? But then like a lot of times I think like strike through can add something where it's like people know that the sentence usually ends this way. And as to not make it confusing, I've included the ending of the phrase as you know it,
right?
But then I struck through it, and then, mm-hmm, I added my own comedic ending,
right,
to the end of the narrative,
exactly.
And so it's funny because I think the frequency that I'm reaching for strike through has increased tenfold over the past, like, I would say 1 year.
Yeah, well, that's interesting. I mean, it's like, it's interesting to me because like when we were growing up, like, you know, you're just like a kid playing around on Microsoft Word, having the time of your life.
Naturally. You know? I mean,
such was the 90s.
When you don't have computer games, text-based interaction is about as fun as it gets.
Word processing, you know, I'm using a computer right now. This is the height of fun.
Right, right.
But like there was bold, italics, and underline, and it was like because those were the three buttons that I could just go click, it was like it encouraged me to like try and find ways to use them. It always felt special when I was like, oh, now I have a need to italicize something.
But it wouldn't have occurred
to me that like I even like the need to strike through something even existed, you know? Like,
had it been
up there, how different. That's like one of those things, like a butterfly effect. Like if they included four buttons and the fourth one was strike through and it had been there since the beginning, like how different does text communication look today everywhere?
Because it's always
because
been
of
there.
That, yeah, one button being there.
Well, and strike through is kind of interesting because it's like it's like my application is so ridiculously informal that I don't even know what the formal application might be.
Oh,
so like, you know, like when you're yes, using bold, italics, underline, it's like if you're doing like MLA formatting or what is it, even MLA formatting or MLA sources? What is the thing that like at the end where you have to like say like
work cited
page? Yeah. And it's like I think a lot of times the works cited page had requirements where it's like the book title should be in italics and like in parentheses or something,
right,
like that, you know, like there were obvious applications, but like if you're just like typing through like an essay for school or whatever, it's like it doesn't seem very often that you would be like, you know, Humpty Dumpty fell off the wall and then you strike through wall and add,
right,
you know, whatever.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it doesn't seem like there would be as many applications.
Right, right. Yeah.
But who's to say?
Maybe everything would be different.
Maybe everything would be different.
Maybe struck through life would be different.
Okay. There is a different keyboard command that was absent during our youth that I think needs to be standard across all applications at all times, always.
Okay, what you got?
And that is that when you press, if you have pressed spacebar and you were just starting your next word with the colon, that it should pop up the emoji keyboard.
Oh, yes.
Yes. Like, because this functionality is present in both Discord and Slack,
which are both things we use daily.
Yeah, we use them daily. And it is my favorite function of both of these things,
yes,
then I can just hit colon and the emoji keyboard will immediately pop up. Like on your phone, it's not as big a deal because there's like a little button with a little smiley face on the bottom and it's just like, right, here's the emoji keyboard, whatever. I have my own problems with that. Like, I don't know why you can't set your favorite like emojis,
right,
in Apple. Like, can I just choose like 10 that are like, these are my most common used? Because normally your most common use, like if you scroll all the way to the left, like there will be like, here's the ones you've most frequently used the most recently.
Right.
But it's not like it. I wish it was sorted by most frequently, because sometimes it's like, sometimes I'll mix it up for a little bit and then I'll come back and I have to go re-find a really common one.
Yeah.
It's annoying. But like I'll get on Twitter or YouTube or really any other platform and I'll go to do the colon thing and it's like, nope, that doesn't activate it. And it feels like on every other website, when you click the emoji, like, button, it takes like 2 full seconds for the thing to pop up. And I don't understand why there's such a lag between clicking it and then it popping up. And then like everyone has like their own like sort of version of what the emojis look like.
That,
and it's like, is this not like a standard thing?
This was a question I was going to ask you. Yeah. Like, do you think that emojis belong in the dictionary?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I'm surprised that, I mean, not, I don't necessarily disagree with you. I am surprised at your vehemence.
Oh, like it's only because it's something I have considered before.
Okay.
Or because I think some are actually.
Are they? Okay.
Like this was like a, you know, if you're Webster Dictionary, how do you stay hip in 2018 or whatever? And they're like, we're putting the laughing crying emoji in the dictionary. And it was like, what? You can't, that's not a word, Brent. It's like, whatever. But now guess what? People are talking about the dictionary. Yo, what?
Yeah.
Big move.
The dictionary people are like, yeah.
They're like, we got
it. We're back.
We did it. We're mainstream. But like, also, I think they did that as almost as a PR move. But I mean, they wouldn't have done it if they didn't think it like made sense. And like, I do think it makes sense because in like the modern day, I use emojis pretty much every day and they pretty much communicate the same thing. Like sometimes they take on different meanings and, you know, like, I don't know, like if you put like the eggplant emoji in the dictionary, would you like list like commonly used as,
right, yes,
or would you be like, this represents a purple vegetable. That's all.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Like, do you need to include the variations as,
but
as
probably
to which we know, I do think probably because it is so adopted in that, yeah, particular manner for that particular example. But it is really interesting because I think that like if emojis were added, like I agree with you. Like I think that I can, it's almost like people used to talk a lot when text-based communication was coming to the forefront that like one of the big issues is that you can't determine someone's tone. And I still think that there's a lot to be said for that. Like I think about this a lot with like interviews, or like if I'm reading like a newspaper article where a quote has been pulled from an interview that somebody has had, it's like the tone, the inflection can make all the difference in the world,
yeah,
in what that person said. And out of context, it might sound really, really bad just to hear the words lined up. But then sometimes if you go and you hear the actual interview itself, it's like, okay, but I think we can all agree that they were not saying this in like a, like an attack formation kind of way.
Right.
You know, like when you hear the actual way it was said out loud, it's like, okay, there's a difference there. But I do think that this is something that's like evolving. Like I feel like I can pick up on people's like tone and where they're coming from based on the way that they're communicating, even if it's like kind of different for everybody. But it's like the longer you work with people, you start to like pick up like on their isms and
absolutely
stuff.
Yeah. I remember
talking to people.
Yeah. Like when I first started working at the concert venue for you bingo players out there.
Nice.
I got an email from my boss one day that just started like FYI. And
oh yes, like, yeah, we're talking about this.
Yeah, I think I've talked about this before. And I remember just thinking like, oh my god, I screwed up so much, because like in like when you're talking in real life, god, our monitor is super glitching out right now. I don't know what is going on. That's okay, we're not gonna talk about that. Like in real life, the only time I'd ever heard anyone say FYI was like, FYI was like in a very corrective manner.
Yes.
Or like a very like, for your information,
right,
or just sort of like, well, like you didn't even know. And like I got this, I read that and I was like, oh my gosh, I've apparently messed up so bad. Like, you know, they're sending this, they're like, for your information, you did this incorrectly or something. And it's like, it was just not at all that.
Right.
Like once you've been like in the workplace for a while, it's like, you realize that the origin point for FYI is just like literally like so you know. Just
right,
like,
right, yes.
And like it, it, and not even the way I said that, I feels like corrective sounding, but it's literally just like, oh, I got this information. I want to make sure you also have this information because it will be helpful to you. Like, it, so it didn't get past you or something. Like, proceed with this information, please. You know, and it's not like there's no rudeness attached to it at all. It's just like, I got this news. Now you have this news. That's all.
It's hilarious because I feel like we only just talked about is it friendly reminder?
Yes.
Yeah. It's like when people say friendly reminder, it's almost the opposite of FYI.
Yeah.
where it's like everyone who's ever saying friendly reminder is always doing it like medium grade passive aggressively.
Yeah.
Where it's sort of like, hey, I'm going to bring something back to the surface because you forgot.
Right. Yeah.
Like these be the rules, and I am now bringing them to your attention. It does. I don't know why. Especially because the word friendly is right there in it.
It's right there in it.
It should be friendly. But back to emojis, I think what I was going to say is that I feel like emojis actually frequently help me express it's almost like adding like a layer of like feathering, you know, to like the
absolutely
kind of like way, like the tone of speech that I'm communicating with, like adding like the laughing crying emoji at the end of something can completely change the context of how it comes across. Like,
yes.
Do you want to hang, like, you know, if Alice texts me and she's like, do you want to hang out with these people? And I just respond, no, then it's like, I feel like it comes across as very much like, no, I don't want to hang out with those people. But if it's like, no laughing crying emoji, it might come across much more like, like sarcastic or like obviously like no, I was looking forward to sitting on the couch and doing nothing, you know, like,
right,
like I think that there's like a like the static no can come across as so cold.
Yeah, it, you know? I mean, especially in like text for sure.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm trying to think the last time I would have just been like no.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like even just like nope sounds a lot friendlier.
It does. It like, does. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Like just adding like just a little bit just more to it.
Just a little flavor. You're right. Like I feel like laughing crying emoji has replaced thankfully like most LOLs and ha-has.
Yeah,
you
yeah
know,
although
out of it.
I feel like LOL for me is back.
Oh, it's back?
It's back, yeah. I feel like, man, I've been using it. Because for the longest time, LOL, it was sort of like you could go from like standard lowercase LOL to like all caps LOL,
yeah,
which gave you like two versions of like, haha, what you said was funny. But I felt like it got to the point with that, like in my AOL Instant Messenger days, where like if I said something and somebody just responded like lowercase LOL, I was like, nah, that didn't land. Like they are acknowledging my attempt at humor,
right?
But it wasn't funny.
More polite.
Then right. If it was like all caps LOL, it's like, whoa, that was a good one.
Like I'm actually laughing.
That was actually good.
Yeah.
But then I also felt like the ha's, like ha 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 ha, you know, like gives like greater layers of inflection, because if somebody said something that was like absolutely hilarious and they sent like a ton of them, it was like then you're like, all right, I totally got it there. It's like the number of ha's dictated the amount of funny.
The amount of funny, but it could also, you could also put it in your sent intended humor as the way to like be like, oh no, this might sound crude, but haha at the end, like, no, I only mean it as a joke.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. It can add like a little bit there. But oh shoot, what was I going to say? Anyway. Yeah. So I think that that's like, this is like what we're up against. But so now for the longest time, because LOL had become so overused, and then because the aggressive uses of ha became overused, it almost reached a point where like if me and Allie were texting early on, like while we were dating or something, and she had said like, ha 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 ha, like in response, I was like, now I'm starting to think that you recognize the level of funny that you think I was going for, and now it's almost
now you're overthinking it.
It's pity ha's.
No. I think you're overthinking that.
Well, so anyway, it doesn't matter, because I think that like it's like fashion, you know. It's like like what I'm using will sort of like come in and out, and mm-hmm. I will be able to express my meaning better or worse depending on one or the other. But it's almost like you have to like put one back on the shelf for a little while and uh-huh. like let it rest.
I will say, I feel like there's nuance to the laughing crying emoji.
Oh sure,
because if you like respond to some, if someone sends you something funny and you want to respond like, oh, like acknowledge the humor in it or whatever, you could be like, oh my god, I love that laughing crying emoji or whatever, and that could like acknowledge it. However, I think if you send just the single emoji, it communicates like that was funnier, because if you send a single emoji, it will be bigger.
Well, you can send up to three.
You can send, exactly. So if you send three by themselves, laughing, crying emoji, that is like, oh my gosh, actually hilarious.
Like peak humor.
This is peak. But if like, this is like a weird thing where it's like, you'd think more would be more, but four I think is less. Because once you get to four, it'll shrink back down.
It's
like,
small.
Now you know, no, those aren't as good.
Right.
Hey, hold on.
Oh, my bad.
Okay, yeah. Four is not as funny as three because three will appear big.
Right. Okay. Well, now next time you send me something, I'm going to send you numerous ha's.
Yeah.
And you tell me how it feels.
Okay. Okay. Well, so here's the other, so like,
wasn't as far, that funny.
Going back to LOL, I was. For my stance on LOL for my entire instant messaging career and texting career was never.
You don't say LOL.
I don't LOL ever. I don't. I've never approved of it. I've always been a haha man.
Okay.
I left LOL way in the dust. But like in the last month or so, we've been doing over on Through the Gryffindor, our other podcast, our Harry Potter podcast.
Yeah.
Like we will be going through, the Harry Potter books and we'll marking up the books page by page.
Yep.
And every now and then characters will have funny moments.
Okay.
Right. And I will want to denote in my book that this was funny so that I can bring it up when we're talking about it.
Yes.
And what I discovered quickly while doing this is that relying on old reliable haha.
Yeah.
You know, if I want to write out that something's very funny and I have to write out like seven ha's or something.
Sure.
Like the act of writing like capital H, capital A, seven times in a row on like a tiny little margin is like kind of difficult and very weirdly time consuming.
Sure.
And it's like, oh, that is like, it takes too much time. So like for the first time in my life, while I've been like marking up the books, I have resorted to LOL. And every time I do it, a part of me dies. But
no!
Like, I know it's like, but like, I know. I'm like, this is so disingenuous to past me. My past self is hates present me for writing this right now.
My turn to turn it back on okay. You. You're overthinking it 100%. And now, I mean, I say that as I'm overthinking. I use LOL in our office Slack all the time. And yeah. Now I'm like, is Jay judging me every time?
No, I'm not judging other people. I appreciate being LOL'd in return.
Okay.
I'm not a user.
Okay.
You know?
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
Like I'm sure, like I'm drinking a Diet Coke over here.
Sure.
I'm sure. Yeah. And I know you don't drink, you know, any dark soda.
Any dark soda.
I'm sure you're not like judging me for drinking it.
No way.
Or
no
maybe
way.
You
yeah.
are.
No, I'm not. I promise I'm not. No.
Yeah.
Not something. It's mostly just that like every once in a while, there was one day I may have talked about this with the Coca-Cola thing where Alice was like describing, or maybe it was you on the pop were describing Coca-Cola. Anyway, someone was doing it.
It
like,
was me.
The fizz, the aroma,
yeah.
like sort
yeah.
of like, you know, the like almost like inhalation nature
yeah.
of like having like a freshly cracked pop, you know, like fizzling on top of the ice cubes, and I was like, crap. I really want one now.
Yeah, just rolling up my Diet Coke recipe for you.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Yeah.
No, but so anyway, but yeah, I'm certainly no judgments whatsoever, but I do think I think currently the stage that I'm in, and I'm 1,000% sure it will change in the future, but I feel like LOL has been giving me a greater amount of expressive abilities than the ha's formerly have.
Than the ha's.
But I've normally been a big ha guy.
I mean,
just in general.
Just a big ha, right.
Maybe for like when we go on tour, we should have a shirt like where you say like, it says like ha 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 and Bible say LOL.
That sounds like a good popcorn culture shirt.
It does. Yeah.
Just,
yeah, like, yeah.
Just us sitting in the chairs. Ha ha ha. LOL.
Yes. Yeah. I love it.
That's
I love
good.
It. Actually, yeah. I got to say, this is like one of those things about going on tour that I'm like so curious about is like whenever I have gone to see musicians play, their selection of t-shirt is extraordinary.
Yeah.
Like without fail. And I can't tell, you know, like in Mean Girls where they cut Regina George's shirt
yeah.
in such a particular way.
Right.
And then she just sort of like owns it. And like walks down the hallway and then like everybody just adopts it. And
right.
It's like one of those things where it's like, well, now it's just cool because like Regina George is doing it. So like everybody wants to do it. And like, that's just the way that cool things work. And I'm like, part of me is like, I can't tell if that's what's happening. Like when you're seeing the person up on stage and they're wearing like the perfect graphic t-shirt.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, you're like, man, how do you, like, how did they come? How, like, is this just how this person dresses? Or like, do they know that while they're up there, they need a shirt that's like kind of edgy, that sort of makes a statement, that's sort of like going against the grain in such a way, but like in the perfect way,
right?
It goes against the grain. So I keep thinking about this because I'm like, you know, there's not going to be that many nights like that we're going to be like, you know, out there in front of like a
group. No, but like, what are you going
to
wear?
But it is like, yeah, it's, I mean, it goes back to that Tenacious D song, like the, like, it's gig time. What t-shirt am I going to wear?
Right. Yeah.
It's like, okay, I need to figure out, like I want to be sure that, like, you know, the look is the exact right of, like, and I mean, this is like how all cool kids look in high school, but it's like somehow it's like manicured but also effortless,
right? Yeah Okay, so yeah, you know what we should do? We should just walk out in those like some like orange Camp Half-Blood shirts.
Oh, that's so funny. Oh my gosh, that would kill.
That would kill. Right? You would be like, I get
that's
it.
Really good. That's really good. Oh man. Okay, I don't hate it.
I
don't hate it. That is so funny, man. Anybody who listens to the pop will be like, I know what they did.
You know what's talking about there.
That's really funny. Okay. Yep. Okay. There you go. Well, transition. Popcorn Culture is sponsored by Shopify. Y'all are likely aware of the fact that we have our very own Shopify store, Carlin Brothers Mercantile. And it's hard to imagine not having it now, but arriving at the decision to open our own web store was a big one. In fact, we started our journey on the interweb back in 2012 and didn't finally open up shop until 2018. And a huge part of that is just not knowing where to start, but that's where Shopify steps in. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, which is a fancy way of saying it's a really easy and effective way to start an online business, no matter if you're operating out of your garage or have like a whole building or three or something. Once we were set up, our biggest concern was trying a new product, only to discover no one was interested in it. But Shopify is powered with so many reports, more than you can even imagine. And this is so handy because it allows us to use data to better provide what folks are actually interested in. It's so easy to use, but even if you do find yourself caught in a jam, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Sign up for a $1 per month trial at shopify.com/poppop. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/poppop now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/poppop.
Popcorn Culture is supported by Arena Club. Okay, so you guys know that I love trading card games and that me and Ben are big time collectors of Pokemon cards. You know, it's that childhood fantasy of finally being able to use adult money to buy those highly coveted rares of our youth. And like, even in our office, we have not one, but two full display cases with some of our all time favorite rarest cards that we've pulled. But something I did not know existed when I was a kid in my youth was the grading process for trading cards or sports cards or whatever you're collecting. You know, to me, it was just like a rare Charizard is a rare Charizard. Like, it doesn't matter if it's been hanging out in my pocket with my lucky paperclip. Turns out it does matter, and kind of a lot, because if you get your cards professionally graded, it can add huge value. And then not only that, but once they're graded, they will like seal them in that pristine condition inside of a plastic case, or what's known in the industry as a slab. And that's where Arena Club steps in, because it's like buying a booster pack, but it's for a pre-graded card. Now, I know that can take like maybe a second to wrap your head around, because you're opening physical cards on a digital platform, which means you open the pack online and see your pulls where they can be added to your showroom for the world to see, but you can also request them to be sent to you at any time. So they have got a ton of pre-graded cards, and then you will get to randomly open one, and then they'll keep it for you, or they can send it to you, or you can just like sell it or trade it online or whatever you want to do. But whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform you have got to check out. And right now, you can get 10% off your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/poppop, which, wow, that is a crazy offer. 10% off a $400 slab pack. That's like $40 right there. Anyway, that's arenaclub.com/poppop for 10% off your first purchase.
At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
All right, Jay, you got an interesting note here, and I know where it spawned from, but I'm going to bring it up anyway.
Okay.
Do you consider showering a chore?
Yes. This came up out in the bullpen earlier, last week, it were, and I was shocked by the answers.
Yeah. So
by the rest of the office here,
the premise here is sort of like, do you consider showering to be like a break from reality, or like a comfortable experience, or something that like you would do, like that's like a desirable thing, or sort of like, yeah, I'm gonna have to shower. Okay,
right.
So go knock that out. Like, yeah. So do you think of it as a chore? Is it something you like need to do, or is it something that like you enjoy to do?
Right. Yes. And for me, it is not a chore at all. I absolutely look forward to it. I consider it like a luxury.
Yeah.
I consider it like a nice part of my day.
Yep.
And like when I wake up, I'm like, I can't wait to get in the shower. It's like a very enjoyable experience. Even just like, you know, like I like standing in the hot water, even just like washing my hair, like scrubbing my body, you know, it's all of it very good. There's nothing chore about it.
Okay.
Yeah. It's like, I like even when I get up, I go downstairs, I have coffee, I get all the kids like breakfast. I'm like, all right, everyone's good. Time to shower.
So are you a shower every day kind of lad?
This always blows my mind. People are like, I shower like every other day. I'm like, I don't understand. What do you mean you shower every other day? You shower every day.
Right.
When you say every other day, you mean every day.
You mean every day.
You mean every day. Yeah.
Well, I think this is like one of those things that for the most part, like I think for the better part of all of my life, I have showered every single day without really thinking about it. I feel like there has been some like realization, like as you get older, or like maybe more experience or research or conversation, or I have no idea what, R&D, but it seems like showering every day is both bad for like your skin and hair, because there's like oils that like need to like, you know, be able to do their natural oil thing.
So okay,
I think that there's like an argument that it can like dry out your skin or something like that.
Okay.
To shower every day, because you are like taking all of that off of your person. But yeah, for the most part, I've done it forever. And then like when I started dating Allie, I remember this was something that like I was just surprised by. I was like, oh yeah, do you need a shower? And she's like, no, I'll just shower tomorrow. And I was like, what? That seems odd.
What do you mean?
I'm confused.
What do you mean? What are you, gross or something? Oh, you're gross. No, I get it.
I think it is like the hair especially.
Yeah, you know,
like
this when is you've something
got, like, longer hair.
Yeah, for sure. I think for women, it is definitely like if you just have long hair in general, it is more of a nuisance. Whereas, you know, I've had short hair pretty much my entire life. And even my hair at its longest was not, you know, that didn't stop me from showering, obviously, but
sure.
Yeah, most people I know with long hair have longer hair than I've ever had.
Right. Yeah. Well, I think this was like one of those weird ones as well. Like where, when I was going through like, you know, my high school years, it was like, I was growing out my hair realistically for the first time, like really long hair. People would call it the Justin Bieber haircut. I would call it the Steve Prefontaine haircut.
Rightly so.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I mean, you know, childhood idol and stuff, which by the way, I watched the movie Without Limits over the weekend. And I feel like I consumed it in such a very different capacity than I ever did my entire life. It's probably the movie I have watched the most times.
So when you say in a different capacity, like you like go on.
I feel like I've always interpreted in. So the movie is about a runner in the 1970s named Steve Prefontaine, who sort of became like a running sensation.
Yes.
Because he was like, he brought like celebrity to the sport. People were like hyper tuned in on this like one track athlete from Oregon in particular.
Yeah.
And his whole philosophy was that like he would go out and he would basically throw all strategy to the wind and he would just front run.
Yeah.
So he would be the first person out and he would just go as hard as he could until he could not.
Yeah.
And his like very famous quote was like, to give anything less than the best is to sacrifice the gift.
Yeah.
And I guess sort of like, I mean, I won't give away the important details, but he runs the 1972 Munich Olympics. And it's, you know, just like a whole thing, you know, it's a very entertaining sports story slash movie.
Right. And it's like, yeah, definitely you should check it out, because like whether or not you've ever heard of Steve Prefontaine, you have been affected by him.
Almost certainly.
Like,
yeah.
Like if you own any Nike apparel, you've been affected by him.
Yes. Yeah.
If you've ever gone for a run, that's because of him. Like you don't even realize it, but like it is.
Yeah.
Like people like pre Steve Prefontaine, people just didn't go out and just like go running.
Right.
Like it seems so commonplace and so regular, and you probably know so many people who run, but it's like that's still because of him.
Yeah. 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 It's his impact on the sport is rather considerable. And his coach, Bill Bowerman, is sort of like, everybody talks about like Phil Knight when they talk about Nike, cause he's sort of like very famous and he's like the business figurehead and like all that type of stuff around it. But Bill Bowerman is like the guy who like was originally making shoes for his track team using a waffle iron.
Yeah.
And like he was pouring rubber over a waffle iron to like create these like spike shoes,
yeah,
you know, which is like where, and they
but like, that were like super lightweight.
They were super lightweight. So we had this like whole philosophy behind it and everything. Anyway, so as I was watching it over the weekend, I've always just in my head thought of like Coach Bowerman as being like really tough on Pre, like a really intense type of coach. And I think on this like latest pass I was watching, and I was like, he just cares about him. He just cares about his athletes. He just wants them to like yes, he wants them to go and compete and do well and stuff like that. But it's more important to him as a coach that they are like prepared for the future, that they are getting something out of this experience, and if they can learn from this experience, then they might be able to like take that experience and apply it and succeed
right
in their lives, because their lives are going to consume way more of their life than running
yeah, especially in like 1970, 1972, when it's like, if you're a collegiate track runner, that's probably about as far as running can take you.
Yes,
unless you're like five people.
right. Yeah, there's a very small handful of people who are doing it, yeah, like in a highly careerified capacity at this point in time. So anyway, I think it was just very interesting to me, because I think it's probably like, you know, I think as a kid watching Steve Prefontaine, I totally understood like the rebellious nature of Pre as an athlete,
right?
You know, or more of like that like sensation or feeling of like being misunderstood, or the idea of just going and like running until you can like exhale all of like your feelings,
right?
You know, by just like going as hard as you could. So like the thing is that like Pre's philosophy is terrible.
It's terrible.
Like he doesn't have a good approach to athletics.
It is almost the problem that if you are like a high school cross country runner, like you are inevitably going to come across Steve Prefontaine. You're going to think he was awesome and cool and had great hair and a killer mustache, and like his leave everything on the table, collapse at the finish line approach was like, you know, so baller.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's such a bad way to be a competitive runner.
Yes,
like,
it is.
He is wholly unique in his ability to do it. And even in the movie, runs faster when he doesn't do it.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, like, yeah, exactly. It's like when he actually implements a real strategy, he does like his best work.
Right.
So anyway, but it was just very interesting to me, because it's like it makes you wonder, as you consume things as like a younger person, like you're looking at it through the young person lens. And then as you get older, you start to look at it through the other person's lens, and you start to realize the people who write stories are knowingly writing stories from both perspectives. But I was failing to see Bowerman's perspective pretty much the whole time. And I'm like, well, this is crazy. So that was kind of like a fun and unique experience, because like we always talk about like how we grew up watching like the Pixar movies, The Incredibles, you know, Monsters Inc., stuff like that, like in like the car with mom in like the drop down DVD player type thing. And that was true. But probably the movie that lived in there the absolute longest is Without Limits.
Yeah, yeah. So go check it out for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
Super good. Although I'll tell you what, did we talk about this last week that we both watched Miracle?
Yeah, we did. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I've been like a total like, know, just like sports movie sports bender. Movies, yeah.
So good. Like that movie, by contrast, is like, it's like, I don't know how much of it is like, you know, accurate or that actually happened. I mean, the hockey games obviously happened, but like there's one scene in particular where it's just like the mindset of coaching, like, and like the desire to like get your boys to win on the ice, you know, in ways, it's like, you're almost like, it almost seems like at times, like who's the coach?
Herb Brooks.
Herb Brooks. Yeah. He's like straight up just manipulating them at times.
Yes.
And it's like, and it like so works. Like one time, like one of his star players gets like hurt and talks to the doctor and he's like, can he skate? Can he get hurt more? And he's like, well, no, but it's going to be very painful. And he's like, well, that's all I need to know. And he goes in and just berates the kid like, oh, are you sitting down on me? Like, what do you want? You know, basically just calls him a wimp. Like, if you can't skate, get off the ice, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Put your streets back on.
I don't even want you here. And it, you know, it's like so mean in the moment.
And
like the whole team is just like, coach, what are you talking about? The man can barely walk. And the guy's looking at him like, I've given you nothing but 1,000% effort out there. And he's like, you want me to I'll skate. And like the whole team is just like up in arms about it. He walks out, he talks to the assistant coach, he's like, that'll get him going.
Yeah,
he's
that'll
like,
get him going.
Yep.
And the assistant coach is like, I'll help clean up. No problem.
And sure enough, they go out on the ice and now they're all fired up, like, I'll show you.
Right.
He's like, oh yeah, just show me what you do. Win.
Yeah, right.
Like, yeah.
You win, I win.
You win, I win, we win.
Yeah.
Let's go. Yeah.
Oh. No, you're right. Because I love the line very early on in the movie where they're like, well, maybe if they all hate him, they won't have time to hate each other.
Yeah.
And it's like, there's like the assistant coach again, I think, is having a conversation with like the trainer or with the doctor.
Yeah.
And he's like, the assistant coach is like, you can watch it hit him in the face. Like, he's like,
Oh. Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
But like, this is like one of those things. Like, this to me is like the miracle, talking about the movie named Miracle, but like about being able to do that is you would have to have such vision and tenacity to stick to your guns, like to do that. Like I would have to be departing who I am as a human being so much.
Oh, I know.
To allow my whole team to hate me in the name of success.
But but it's like one of these weird relationships where it's like they don't really hate him.
No, I know. I mean, clearly it's working.
Yeah.
And I think that like that's like one of those things where it's like okay, it's coming together.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
Yeah. We're like, we're a much better hockey team and you know, like you're pushing us really hard, but it's working and we all bond together in the pain of it all. And,
right.
Yeah. Stuff. But it's like, and then it's like, where is the line? Because it's like what they're going for is the Olympics. And it's like there's literally, it's not like college hockey. It's not like high school sports or anything. It's like we're most likely, you know, you're going to finish here and then you're going to go to college. Or you're going to finish here and then you're going to have a real life. You know, it's like, we're at the Olympics. Our goal is to win. And that is literally it. There is no, like, we're not happy with anything other than winning.
Yeah.
You know, it's not, you know, and I guess that's probably even true in high school and stuff. But it's like, that so often it feels like the messaging you get from, like, I don't know, the wider world of entertainment is just like, try your best, man. It's just a game. And it's just like, for the coaches that are winning, that's not what they're telling their team, you know?
Oh, yeah, like, yeah. Yeah, no,
they're like,
no.
We are trying to win. We didn't come to this tournament to lose. We come to lose? No, you know.
Right. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, I know. It's true. It's like, you know, and I mean, that's the thing. It's like, it's probably where it's so difficult to paint with broad strokes as well, because if you're an Olympian, your goal is to win.
Yeah.
You did not get here by mistake. Your entire life has revolved around this.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's like to not win is like to have had all of that. I mean, not, you know, this is not the case for any Olympians out there who are like, you know, I didn't win, you know, so it's my whole life like a waste of time. But it's like in those moments, it's like you've committed everything.
Right.
You know,
these people are insanely competitive.
Yes. Yeah. It's like, you know, they're there to go.
Yeah.
Which, you know, for the most part, I think it's like on that level, it applies to those people 100%. But then the thing is about like most other sports is that most of us who do, you know, high school or rec league athletics or even like, you know, collegiate or intramural athletics and stuff like that, it's like for the most part, it is just for fun.
Right. It's like, yeah, it is like, you know, it's like, so if you're, you know, does your rec league, this is where you have to, like, if you're going to like coach like rec league soccer for a bunch of like, you know, 10-year-olds.
Sure.
Like, they're old enough to have played some soccer. They know what they're doing with the ball,
right. Hopefully.
You know, they can take some direction. They're not just like, you're not just like herding cats anymore.
Yeah.
Like, how much do you care, or how much as the coach should you be trying to like really get them to win? Or is it really just more about like, let's just like focus on fundamentals and like make sure everyone has a good time out there?
Yeah.
You know, like where does the line get drawn where it's like, oh, like where it's okay to be like, we're trying to win this game.
Right. No, I know. That's a good question. It's a good question. Cause it's like, I've always wondered about like whether or not, like, do you think you'd have the pull? Like, do you think you'd ever like want to like coach like any of your kids?
I mean, maybe, yes. I think like I've thought about it a bunch because I'm like, you know what? I really like playing games, you know?
Yeah.
Like, this is the same thing on some level. It's like, that being said, like, I don't have any experience coaching at all, you know?
Yeah, it's like the sport I probably played the most growing up was soccer. And like, mm-hmm. I don't think I could draw you a play like
right.
using like a like one of those like dry erase like clipboards. Like I don't think I could do that. Like I think for me, a lot of like my experience with like all of soccer was, can you run faster than them? Can you kick the ball harder than
them? Most of my like rec league soccer experience, I don't recall ever running plays.
Right.
You know, it was a lot of like get the ball to your fastest person and hope they can beat the defense and shoot.
Yeah, pretty much. Like it's like who's got the best ball handling skills?
Right.
But give the ball to them and they'll try to get through.
Right.
And score.
There was a certain maybe there was a certain amount of like, oh, we're doing a corner kick, like we line up this way and we do that, or we're doing a throw in, like you stand here and then you stand here and, you know, oh, someone spins and, you know, get them the ball.
Right.
Or throw it to them, they'll hit it back to you. Sort of like very tiny things like that. But a lot of it was just like, get the ball skills, get the passing, just sort of have better soccer skills in general.
Exactly.
Yeah. But like, I feel like we were also, but like on the flip side, there were a few like basketball teams I was on where it was like, the coach would have like drawn up play. This would be for like, you know, 10-year-olds,
right?
You know, like, you know, we've got plays, you know, like Ray's going to get the ball and he's going to bring it down the court and he's going to hold up like one or two, where he's going to like tap his head or something. And that means this play. And that means he's going to pass it to this guy. And when he does that, you two switch places and you go over here. He's going to pass it to this guy who's going to go here. You're going to be under the basket, goal, you know? And
right.
It's like, you know what? We would do that play 10 times a game and it would work 8 times a game.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And it was like, and I remember just like, it was like amazing to me because that was, I don't know. That was like, I feel like if I was going to do it, like I think I would just literally buy a physical book about like how to coach kids basketball.
Sure.
And
hopefully, yeah.
And then like, you know, there's probably, here's how I imagine the book is laid out. Here's 4 chapters of fundamentals about how to pass the ball, how to teach people to pass the ball, like bounce passes, chest passes,
sure.
Overhead, whatever. And then like, I imagine there's like a second play is like, here's some basic plays you can get your boys to run. And it'd be like, okay, that's what, let's try and learn 2 plays.
Yeah.
That's what we're going to do.
Yeah. Luke's going to run down the court. He's going to hold up a 1 or a 2.
Yeah.
We're going to do one
of
them.
We're going to do one of them. It's up to him. Read the D, right? That's right.
Right. Yeah. That was like the thing though, as a kid, I remember like that, like you're right. Like you said, Ray, I remember Ray. He was good.
Dude, he was good.
Yeah.
I think he played for UVA.
He was very good. But I always like looked at those kids with like it was almost like a golden glow sort of like oozed out from them in every direction.
Yeah.
Like, how are you so good at this sport at our age? Because I'm the same age as you and you're like clearly better.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So talent.
Talent, you
dedication,
know.
Dedication, interest.
Yeah. I mean, I want to say just not to keep talking about Ray, who I've thought about in 20 years. He lived on the same block as us. And I do feel like anytime if you're like walking around the block, if you walked past his house, he was out there shooting hoops.
He was shooting hoops.
And it was like, well, yep.
You know, this has been, I mean, getting it, like, this is like one of the funniest things. So basketball was like a sport that I could never excel at. I was just, I don't know what it was. Maybe it was like the coordination or something. Like, I think oddly, that's like maybe like one of those things. I don't know if I'm a terribly coordinated human being. Like,
what?
Yeah, I don't think so.
What?
Maybe not so much. Maybe not like ball handling type things.
Okay.
Maybe it was like why I liked playing like pickup games of football, because I could catch the ball with my big hands, but then like pretty much after that, all I had to do was run real fast.
Yeah, run, yeah.
Which I could do.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, okay, no problem. But like basketball, you sort of had to like be able to like dribble between your legs and like do the fake out and like, you know, do like a up one. No, I'm just kidding. Ha ha ha.
Yeah.
Ball, you know, ball
pump fakes and all that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, pump fakes. That's the term.
That's
the
word.
You wonder why I don't know it? Because I can't do it. Where was I going with this? I had a thought.
You're not coordinated.
Not coordinated.
Basketball.
Oh, yes. Yeah, basketball. So, but one of my all-time favorite things to do is just go and shoot hoops.
Yeah.
Like, all I ever want to do is just, like I feel like this is, like, a version of decompression that maybe I learned growing up, like, in our cul-de-sac.
Yeah.
You know, it's just sort of, like, if I was, like, you know, again, in, like, an AOL instant message argument with somebody because they said, ha, instead of ha ha ha,
right.
You know, and yeah. I was like, oh goodness, no, this is the worst. I need to go decompress from this. I would go out into the cul-de-sac and I would just like bounce the ball a couple times and then shoot the hoop. Bounce the ball a couple times, shoot the hoop. Bounce the ball a couple times, shoot the hoop. And I would just do it on repeat. And it was just sort of like, I wasn't even thinking about basketball or making the shot. And I had no goals or objectives. I just liked the incredibly passive activity of essentially doing nothing while doing something.
Yeah.
And so I feel like growing into adulthood, it's been this like odd problem where I'm like, I would really love to have like a basketball hoop that I could go and shoot at. And it's like an oddly like elusive thing in terms of like availability.
I know. It's like where, because like, yeah, we were fortunate enough growing up to be in a cul-de-sac where we could just have the basketball hoop. And, you know, you had to, of course, the cul-de-sac isn't a perfectly level playing field or anything. It's like a little tilted runoff and then our hoop had, you know, fallen over a few times in the wind. So it wasn't a perfect circle, but you learned all the quirks. Yeah. It's like, you know, you got to learn to play the hoop. You got to have that home court advantage or whatever.
Exactly.
But, you know, you could go out there any time of day, all day, any day and just shoot. Whereas like, yeah, now, like even when I was buying my house that I live in, which I love, like there was this like one asterisk in my mind. It's like, there's not really anywhere but a basketball hoop.
Yes.
You know, and it's like one of those things, like when you're, you know, like I've got what we need to move because Beth's pregnant. We're going to have twins. We got to buy a house, you know, like this house is basically perfect in every way. And it's probably going to be sold by the end of the day. And it's like, is it the sort of thing that like stops you from buying a house? It's like, no, of course not.
Right.
But now it's like 5 years later and you're like, man, I really wish I had a basketball hoop somewhere.
Yeah.
Like so even as we're like talking about putting in like our concrete pad, it's like, what if I make it big enough that I can put a hoop up, you know?
I can put a hoop.
And I'm like, and then I'm like talking to myself. I'm like, you know, trying to reason myself. And I'm like, even then, what can I make? Like, I wouldn't be able to shoot even like a 3-pointer from the amount of space I could cover with concrete.
Right.
You know, but like, it's like foul shot range, you know?
That's not so bad.
Not so bad.
Yeah.
You know, kids could, they could play horse. They could play 21 out here. Probably. Maybe.
Yeah.
They could learn to shoot. Well, better than nothing.
It's so funny, but yeah, this is like one of those things too, like where even like every time, because the prime example is like we've moved our office since we started Super Carlin Brothers 3 times.
Yeah.
So it was at
my house, then it was at the apartment and then the office and then our current office. So we're in office number 4,
yeah,
I suppose.
All of these places we stayed for a rather lengthy amount of time too. Like it's always been like a thing, like where we've been there long enough to sort of like, you know, not feel like we're just constantly like jumping from place to place to place or anything like that. We're pretty settled in, the roots go out and everything. It's all good. But this is like one of those like really odd ones where forever and ever, like I'll always like look up like, you know, just like casually like looking at like warehouse spaces.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's really silly because as a YouTube office, a warehouse is kind of the worst possible scenario because there's so much echoing that can happen. It's so much void.
Right.
Like it's hard to create dedicated spaces. But in my head, I'm like, but you know, here's the thing. If we build an office out of a warehouse and it kind of has tall ceilings, then like on some spot we could set up a basketball.
I know.
And it's like it is so absurd that I'm like, what if we were to build a structure so that we could have a basketball hoop?
Right. It's like, what hoops are we jumping through so we could throw balls through those hoops?
Exactly. You know? Exactly. But it's like, in my mind, I'm like, this is not crazy.
Right.
Like,
but also in the meantime, it's not like you're playing basketball at all.
None at all. Yeah. I don't even own a basketball.
I know. Right?
You know, like, but so then on that note, this was kind of like a funny one because when Addie was really little, one of the first toys that I bought her was a little, like, it was like a combo light up, makes noises, small basketball hoop, soccer goal situation.
Yeah.
And it came with like a little collection of balls. And so you could like pick up the ball and drop it through the hoop. But right. It was like, you know, as high as your knees.
Yeah.
It's very like small and it's just a piece of plastic or whatever. So last weekend, while we were doing like solo parent weekend,
yeah.
while the girls were all out of town, I left work on Friday. We got out of work just a little bit early. And I was like, I'm going to go to the store and I'm going to go find like a toy basketball hoop for Addie to play with as like a fun sort of like, okay, it's the weekend. It's just us. Like, let's see if we can throw something new into the mix that gives us an activity.
Right, yeah.
So as I get to the store, Alice has arrived in New York and she's just walked into her hotel. So she calls me and I'm like standing there looking at like the Little Tykes classic basketball hoop. You know, it's got like the base and like a little blast, like a plastic yeah, tube
yes.
and like a, like you can lift it and raise
it. I know
it
well.
Yeah. Because you have one.
I have one.
And so I'm standing there, I'm talking to Alice and I'm like, yeah, I'm thinking about getting her this like little basketball hoop thing that we could like, you know, set up. And she's like, I think it's going to be too big. It's going to take up too much space. We don't have like a good spot for it. And I was like, yeah, but, and she's like, what, do they have any water tables? And I was like, they do, but there's a, I would kind of,
the water tables would take up more space.
They do take up more yeah. space, which she didn't know because she couldn't see the boxes. But it's like I'm standing there looking at it, and it's like this is like one of those moments where I was like, I want the basketball.
I want that basketball
because
hoop.
Because you
want
to know what I'm going to do. It's the same thing as like pacing while you're on the phone.
Yeah,
like you know, you just kind of like go back and forth. Like I feel like if I was just in my living room by myself doing nothing else, I would pick up the ball and just throw it,
dude,
and yeah. I would make shots.
I mean, our Little Tykes basketball hoop is yeah in our basement. And there is not zero times when I have been down there just sort of like on like days I've had to like work home or even just playing with the kids
yeah.
where it's just sort of like, you know what, I'm going to sit on the other side of the room and have the kids throw me balls and I'll just try and, you know, make it
sink
from
a yeah,
yeah.
yeah.
just like it's just like, you know, it's you can still be pretty far. And it's obviously not the same as playing basketball, but it's like it's that act. It's
yeah.
the act of doing it. I don't know. Then, you know, what's funny is that. Like maybe this is just like a family pull
yeah.
or something. Cause you know what? I'm thinking back here. Like I feel like you'd be coming from both sides. Cause like you said, Alice was up in New York. Well, she was up there visiting our cousin who's getting married later this year.
Yep.
And one thing I have always loved about said cousin's house is that there was four of them growing up and they liked basketball. And you know what their parents did was went into the backyard and paved a giant section
like a half court
of asphalt and just put up a basketball hoop and like, guess what? Now we have a basketball hoop.
Yes.
You know, yeah. Like, that's so awesome. And then like, you know what? If you go, but on the side of the family, if you go to our dad's house, like they didn't have like a paved driveway. It's been gravel, but you know what they have in the backyard? Just on a grass court, a basketball hoop,
a basketball hoop.
And if you go to yeah. Vermont in the same thing, it's like, well, there's no paved roads here, but we have flat grass out there. So let's just put up a basketball hoop. You know, if the lawn isn't soaked and wet and mushy because the leach field is wet, which is always, but on occasion it wasn't. And on those occasions, you could go out there and play basketball.
You could.
Yeah.
You could.
It's like our family has gone out of their way to include basketball hoops wherever they can. And
like,
you and me right now find ourselves in situations where it is very difficult.
Well,
I'm like,
I know. Yeah. That's the thing. So like even so that weekend, you know, of course we're just, you know, doing the thing. And so I bring Addie over to your backyard to play.
Yeah. yeah.
And while we're out there, we're all having like a really good time, and like, you know, Addie I think really enjoyed getting to play with you, and I was having like some really great moments with like the twins and like Luke. Like, you know, we were like kind of like going off and collecting rocks and sticks and doing all sorts of stuff, and at some point in time you go in, you're like, oh, I'm gonna go grab the basketball hoop. So you go in and you yeah. bring the Little Tykes basketball hoop outside, to which Addie immediately gravitates to, like
yeah. instantly
she's like picking up balls and like throwing in the hoop, and I'm like, yes kid, yeah. yes, you're doing it. But then I'm standing there and I'm like looking at it, and I mean, again, you know, I talked about that, like the golden ray of sunshine coming out behind like the leads on your
yeah.
like rec league basketball team. I'm looking at this thing and I'm like, it's here. And Jay's got like seven balls. This is like the greatest thing I've ever seen. And so like I'm standing there and like, you know, like I'm watching like Addie play with you in the garden, and like the kids are like off on like the power wheel, and Luke's like collecting you know, like his pine cones and stuff like that. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, I'm gonna shoot some hoops.
Yeah,
and so I start like shooting hoops. Like Luke comes over and he's like, can you come play with me? And,
yeah.
and I'm like holding the ball in my hand. I'm looking at the hoop and I'm looking like, at him. And I'm like,
do you mean you want to shoot hoops?
I'm like, Luke, do you understand the extremely rare opportunity that I'm standing inside of right now? Because mm-hmm. like, I'm living my best, man.
I'm doing it, man.
So anyway, I went and collected pine cones instead,
nice.
But,
okay.
but I did get to sink some shots, and it was like, it felt so good.
Yeah. Okay. Well, here's the other thing that I have that's also been going through my mind on this exact trajectory.
Okay.
Is that so? On 3 days a week or 2 days a week, I drop off Luke at school and then I go to the gym and we work out and then I come straight here.
Yeah.
But on the other 3 days of the week, I drop Luke off at school and then I come straight to work.
Right.
Meaning I get to work like an hour earlier than everybody else.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'm really productive in that time, and other times I just sort of like dilly dally and I'm just like, you know what? I've got some alone time. I'm just going to take this time to myself and, you know, do whatever I want.
Yeah, of course.
You know, like don't have to be so hard on yourself right now. But like, it has occurred to me that what I could do is drop Luke off and then go to like a public basketball court and just shoot hoops for an hour.
Because nobody will be there.
Because no one will be there because it's like 7 a.m, you know?
Ugh.
And I'm like, you know what? I think this is the week. I think I might just go do it. Yeah, so
I think you should. It's getting warmer.
I know.
But we've got like crisp mornings, you know?
Yes. Like, crisp. It was 35 degrees this morning.
I know.
I could not believe it.
I was a little frustrated.
Yeah, I was like, what is going on? I have to put the defroster on in my car. Like, I came downstairs this morning and I was like, do I have to turn the heat on? Like, how cold is it in here? I was like, 63 degrees in my house.
I know, it was freezing. Ugh, yeah.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, same.
But anyway, so yeah, I was like, I might go do it. So I don't know what is really in the air, or maybe there's just been this like deep longing for this like missing aspect of our lives that is finally like it was a seed, and like the years have gone by and it's like, dude, get a basketball.
I know. You're exactly right. Like I feel like the people listening right now are like, guys, this is not that hard.
Right.
Like,
yeah, this join is like, a gym.
Exactly. But like the thing about the gym, because I even have a park within walking distance of my home. And the thing about the park is that the people who go and play pickup ball there are good. Like, really good. Like I will be at the playground, like watching them play from afar, mm-hmm. you know, like actually it's probably one of those things where if you like to take a photo, it would like look so sad because it's just like this dad standing in the playground, staring off in the distance at the basketball hoop, like, you know, probably like a basketball sitting on the ground next to me. Can't even like work up the courage to
right,
hold it.
Yeah.
But it's like, I hate the frequency at which if you're shooting hoops on a public court, someone's going to come up to you and say, you want to play a game of pickup? And it's like, I don't want to play a game of pickup.
I'm just here to shoot.
I am just here shooting them. I'm not even playing the sport. I am repeating an activity over and over again.
Right.
That's what I'm doing. And that's it. So anyway, we'll have to work on that.
There you go.
Yeah. I like your idea though. That seems like a good usage of that hour.
It does, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Okay. Well, transition.
Transition.
Okay, Jay. So back in year one of Super Carlin Brothers, this is a weird lead in to a conversation that has nothing else to do with it. But I remember I was struggling. So we would make our videos back and forth every single day. So like, you know, I would upload on Monday, you would upload on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, like whatever. And so we would go back and forth. And so the speed at which I had basically taken any original thoughts from my brain and like squoze them into, you know, my first like 15 videos, it was like, well, that's pretty much all I had. So I don't know what else to think about or like what anybody else wants to hear from me. And there's no direction whatsoever. It's like, this is like where boxes breed creativity. But I remember one day I was struggling really hard. And so I had like this whole concept where I was like, you want to know what's funny is there's not a really good word for being famous for something like really like negative, you know? And so I remember making like a whole video about like, you know, it's crazy. Like there are people who are like famous for doing something bad, but it's like, there needs to be like a specific word for like fame that isn't like good fame, but like negative fame.
Right.
And the very first comment and all of like the 12 others that came in were, there is a word for that. It's called infamous.
Right.
And I was like, oh,
right.
Like,
yes.
Yes.
Correct.
Okay. Mm. So at least I, on my own, came to the conclusion that we need a word that has been invented for a very long time. I got there. Does that count for anything? I don't think it does. So anyway, but I remember this being very embarrassing.
Yeah.
But so over the weekend.
I haven't thought about it. Don't worry.
I don't even know. It's like an infamous video in my head. Yeah. But I was thinking about something over the weekend, and as I was thinking about it, I was like, oh, that'd make a great pop topic. And then this came jarring into my brain, and I was like, what if this is one of those things, and this just exists, and
there's
just a term for it. But I think it's a good idea either way. And I was like, maybe this is something that like people could do, especially in like potentially like in like retirement, because I can see the reasons why people maybe don't do it like in their everyday life. So the idea is that like if you have a company whose goal is not to make money, what would you typically refer to that company as? I'm leading in with a very obvious question.
Right. I feel like you want me to say like nonprofit.
That is exactly correct. That is right. What I wanted you to say. And so it's sort of like the answer to the question, and this is why I've led in with all these other things. It's like, what if there was a company that didn't require making profits? And I feel like the answer is they exist. They're called nonprofits.
Well, okay. But like, so to me, when people say nonprofits, what it drums up in my mind is a company that doesn't not need to make profits. It's just that their goal is to like put all of their profits towards a specific cause.
Yeah, I mean that is largely the objective. Yeah, so it's
like
it's,
but
it's,
they still need to generate income to pay the people to do the work to put the money towards their cause.
Yes, and typically the fundamental basis for the nonprofit is that they are directly implementing whatever service to the community themselves. So it's not a fundraiser. They are the ones who are usually doing
right.
the work.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, okay, like for whatever reason, there's a shortcoming, like and like the government doesn't satisfactorily fill this void. So we are a company that is designed to generate revenue mostly through like, you know, like it seems like some measure of like goodwill on behalf of like the nearby citizens who believe in the cause as well. And so they all kind of like come together. They put the funds in a big pot. That pot is used to do something good for the community. So that is the original answer to the question of what about companies that would do this particular thing.
Right.
But there is what kind of got me more inspired is like, this would be more of like a private company. That's just sort of like me as like the owner of the establishment. I don't need to make money. So maybe you're like in retirement. It's like, I've got, like, I live my life. I did my savings. I did my whole thing. I'm good. I want somewhere to go every day. And I want to provide something that like the community needs. And I don't need to make profits in order for me to continue to exist. Mm-hmm. So it's like, as long as I can pretty much break even just like lose like a little bit, no big deal, because I have the ability to do so. So it's just inherent, like our little neighborhood here could really use a dog park.
Right.
You know, it's like, I don't really have funding for a dog park. Like maybe I can raise, you know, like whatever. And like the dog park will like arise and it'll be cool. You know, like, there we go. I just did it because I just wanted my community to have one. And that's that.
Right. I mow the grass. I pick up the droppings.
Yeah, exactly.
I maintain the fence. There we go.
And maybe on some level that's still like more like the nonprofit vein. But there is a company in or nearby my neighborhood that I feel like is very odd. And it's like, I think almost everybody has the same experience when they go there. And you and I have been there together. And I know that we have had this exact conversation. It's called the Jolly Grape.
Yeah.
So if you're not familiar with the Jolly Grape, I wouldn't be surprised, because it's just basically a small Roanoke establishment. But it is like, it's a place that you can go and they will do a free wine flight.
Yes.
Hard stop. There is no requirement to spend money at the Jolly Grape.
Right. Like they will, you sit down and someone will just come to your table and they will, throughout the course of about an hour and a half maybe, they will pour you four different wines to try and tell you all about it. And you can, and it's not like an insubstantial pours.
It's solid, you know, and sure enough, inside of the Jolly Grape, there are wine bottles galore that you could go and buy. So like, you know, it might be the case, like one of the ones from the wine tasting inspires you to go and grab a bottle and purchase it or whatever. But like anyone who's sitting there doing the math is like, there's five of us in our group. They just poured half the bottle of wine into each of our respective glasses.
Right.
And it's like, if best case scenario is that like we each buy a bottle of wine, it's like, the margins here don't seem like they add up,
right?
To the point where, but like, and so in my head, what the conclusion I've come to is like, I think that this is someone who basically was just like, I think this is fun. It's a cool place for people to go. I like my neighborhood. I like to give the people in my neighborhood a place to come. You know, like the Jolly Grape has no organization. There's no cause underlying attached to it. There's nothing right. like specific, like where you're like, you know, it's like, ah, but you know, it's like, there's like a fund that like kind of keeps, you know, we live off the interest or something, you know, it's not like that. It's no. just like, it is just a company and it's a fun place to go and like hang out with your friends. And it's like a very approachable, low key, like whatever. It's all great.
Right.
But I have no idea how it works.
Yeah. Is it, I don't know either at all. It just seems like you go in because like you, I mean, this is the thing though. It's like, you're right. Like you could have a group of, you know, 5-6 people be like, you guys want to go to the Jolly Grape? And everyone be like, yeah, let's go. And you could all go and you could sit at a table for 2 hours and you could all take the flight and just stand up and leave and have spent no money and netted wine.
Correct.
However, I will say that has never, ever been my experience.
Well,
Well, like, you know, I've never been to the Jolly Grape with anyone who didn't also leave with a bottle of wine.
Yes, yes. And I mean, to me, it feels like the, it's kind of like, you know, it's like tipping, you know, it's like
it's a little bit
like there are like standards or baselines or like whatever, but like, you know, I don't even know if like the amount as time has gone on has changed. I mean, my minimum tip amount is 20%, you know, and I feel like when tipping first started, it would seem like people would go to like 15, but like it was kind of like the like LOL. It's like at some point in time, it's like
right.
15 sort of seems like the minimum, but like realistically, like as long as they did a nice job, you would do more than 15. I don't even know if that's like the agreed upon opinion or anything, but that's usually like my personal approach. So,
right.
but it still seems like a highly reasonable thing where if like you go, you got to have the location, the fun, the experience, the wine itself, you know, like it's all provided for you. And then, you know, if you buy a $20 bottle of wine and you like leave the experience and it's like, you still have a bottle of wine. And I easily would have paid $20 for this, like this evening of fun anyway,
right.
without also getting to leave with a bottle of wine.
Right.
Which of course now I'm saying it's like the owner is like listening. It's like, wait, really?
Yeah.
I could be like, charging for this?
Right. Like you can just sit down and be like, hey, it'll be $20 and we'll give you the whole spiel, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
And like you'd be like, that's fine.
No,
but it's not. You could walk in, drink and leave. End of story.
Exactly.
And it's not like you're going to walk in next time and they're like, whoa, 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 buddy.
Yeah. Well, we know what you're up to.
Right. Yeah, right.
I mean, I'm sure that there's a version of abusing the system that would eventually get flagged. But I mean, like you said, I don't think I've ever witnessed somebody to do that.
Right.
Anyway. But so it's interesting because so I keep calling in my head not so profits.
Yeah.
Which is not a very good name. but like as I was trying to come up with it, I was like, well, don't be too creative because a word probably already exists for exactly what this thing is.
Right.
But it reminded me back in the day, I think that like Domino's Pizza for a while was running a campaign where they were just like, they just decided that they were going to go and start filling in potholes just as like citizens.
Right.
You know, and it's like usually as like a for-profit company, any expense that is not required for the company to continue is going to immediately be brought up at like a boardroom somewhere and eliminated, you know, because it's like, no, we could make more profit by not filling in potholes for no reason, because that's not our job. Like there's like a city that has funds and trucks and people and like everything.
Right.
To fill
regulations
in potholes.
And yeah.
Right. But, you know, I think at some point in time, Domino's like, yeah, we're just going to do it. I mean, to be fair, it's probably a massive PR stunt and it's just marketing.
I mean, yeah, it's like, yeah, it does seem like a big PR stunt. And also, I can imagine, like, if you're Domino's, like, you've probably got, you know, second to, like, you know, the post office and FedEx and UPS, you've probably got more cars, you know, on the ground doing your business than most companies.
Sure,
and it's like, potholes are probably this enormous problem for your entire company, where it's just like, yes, every single day, 4 cars across the country need to go to the repair shop because they hit a pothole.
Right.
You know, and they're just like, you know what? What if we decrease potholes in America by 25%, and that saves us in repairs X dollars.
Not to mention we could then make a whole marketing campaign around
Good Samaritans we are.
Exactly. So yeah. I'm not necessarily saying that I'm like completely like falling for it as like, well, now look at them. They're such good people. You know, because I'm sure that there was a strategy in mind and the bottom line was still probably like the primary objective. But it's something that I feel like I've contemplated before, which is sort of like just this idea of like just doing goodwill for the sheer sake of the goodwill attached to it.
Well, I'm sure there's an underlying methodology to it. But this morning, I fell down a rabbit hole on Instagram where this guy will go find like overgrown lawns and just like, you know, go knock on the owner's door and be like, hey, I was, I mow lawns. I was wondering if I can mow yours. And they're like, nah, no, it's, you know, we don't want to pay for it. Or we don't got it. He's like, no, I would just do it for free. And they're like, oh, really? And it's like, yeah, no charge at all. And it's like, they're, you know, it's always like, okay. And like the lawns he finds are always insanely overgrown.
Sure.
And, but like what the end result, however, it's like he does it for them for free. The end result is that he has these immensely satisfying time lapse videos of him clearing out sidewalks and mowing lawns and before and after photos that get like millions of views. So it's like, it was free to that person. And I'm sure on Instagram and TikTok, you then netted the actual payment.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like, but in the meantime, it's like, you know, then he'll go talk to the other person and they'll just be like, you know, in tears sometimes. Like, you know, my house is a whole new place now. And,
yeah,
you know, so it's like, you know, and I'm sure it's like one of the, it's such a weird line. It's like, is his goal to make viral videos or is his goal to just help people? And it's like, this, I think, is such a difficult thing for people to understand, that it is okay for it to be both.
I was going
to
say, you know, it's the perfect cross section.
It is a win-win for just literally everyone involved. That person got their lawn mowed. That guy got paid a different way for doing it. And you, the viewer, got a entertaining visual experience to watch it unfold. And it's like, people, like, it is so difficult to wrap your eyes around, like, and not be like jaded, like, well, he's not really free, he's making money on TikTok. And it's like, that's okay. It's like, it can be both. He can want to perform a good service and make a viral video, and those can both be true at the same time. Like,
right,
you know,
right. I think this is like, yeah, it's like one of those things where it's like, if this was just somebody who was like, hey, I own a lawn care business, here's some satisfying videos of me doing like lawn care maintenance, nobody would have like any issues. It's, I think that like where people get caught in the weeds, pun intended, is the value proposition that this is somebody who's doing something nice, you know, but also recognizing it's like, yeah, but I think there's like in the TV show Friends, there's like a whole episode about this where I think like Phoebe maybe is saying like, there's no such thing.
No, Joey is saying there's no such thing as a selfless good deed.
Okay,
to
okay.
Phoebe.
To yes. Phoebe. Okay. And it's like one of those things where it's like the marker is almost like if you're like, no, like I just went and donated like $25 to an organization in need. It's like, I made nothing out of it. I got nothing back out of it. Boom. There you go. And it's like, do you feel good about it? It's like, yeah, of course I feel good about it. Then it's like, there you go. Then like it was a little bit for you,
right?
You know, like a little bit of like why you did it was because like being generous to somebody makes you feel good. So then it's like, well, then you need to find like a cause that you can
like,
give.
Like, why do people draw the line at like, it's not okay to want to feel good?
No, exactly.
Right.
I mean, it is like our underlying programming for just about every single thing that we do in life,
right,
is to feel good, to feel safe, to feel fulfilled. Like, that's the primary like driver,
right,
for us as human beings. So it's like, it totally makes sense. But no, so I love that though. But it's even interesting as well, because I wonder if eventually what I'm describing a little bit could be coined as like, which is an odd reach, because I don't even think I've ever watched one of these videos before, but like the Mr. Beast effect.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think like what Mr. Beast once upon a time figured out was just simply that like, I can go and tip a waitress $1,000 because I will make $2,000 in, and I'm just making up numbers here, I have no idea, but like in AdSense or through like revenue generated from the video of this person reacting to the glorious situation,
right,
that was receiving a $1,000 tip, you know, like just on like a random Tuesday.
Right.
You know, and it's like, I think what he learned from that was like, okay, so I started with that. I did $1,000 and then I made $2,000. So now I have $2,000 that I can give away. And I need to find a way to give away $2,000 in a way that generates $4,000 and so on and so forth.
Right.
And it basically just seems like what he has done throughout the entire course of his digital career is just up the ante over and over and over again, you know, to the point where it's like the stuff that he's doing is so absolutely ludicrous that people can't look away.
That is, I think, more or less the formula.
Yeah.
As it goes. And it's like, then, but like, it is unavoidable. Like, people in the comments would be like, well, if he was really, you know, just doing it for good, he wouldn't need to film it and show everything. And it's just like, But what's the harm in doing that?
Right.
You know, do you think it's just performative? Because like at the end of the day, like, you know, if what he did was go help people and then filmed it, and what he helped was by, you know, we gave this, you know, small community, you know, $10 million or built a bunch of wells in Africa, which I think he did, or, you know,
yeah,
and it's like,
yeah,
that's really cool. And people are like, oh, it's just so performative, you're just doing it to get views. And it's like, yeah, but those people also have water now.
Yeah, they're like,
right. Like it, you know, even if it's performative, it still did something and it's a lasting effect. And I don't know. It's like people are like, they are so, I don't know why people get mad about like it's as if like you can't want to do good and want to be paid for it.
You know, it's funny because I think it boils down to a conversation we've had before, which is like your feeling of guilt about like ordering like a salad at lunch.
Yeah.
You know, where it's almost like, you know, if you're with that person and everybody goes around the table and orders hamburgers, and then one person orders a salad. It's like, well, geez, man, you know, like we all ordered burgers,
you know,
and
you're
getting a salad. It's like making us all look bad over here. And I think that probably if I had to guess is, and I mean, again, I don't think I've actually watched a Mr. Beast video before, so I don't know enough about like the whole thing.
I mean, they're engaging.
I'm sure they are. So I don't know like a lot about the equation. I just sort of have like in a very removed capacity attempted to like break down what I feel like is his model. But in a lot of ways it almost feels like his model is sort of like what I'm describing here on some level, like, which is the idea of sort of like, if you can find a way to like do something good and that something good allows it to continue to do more good, then like that feels like what you're going for,
right?
Yeah. You know, like it's like, I mean, that's not the worst position to be in necessarily. So it's like, I don't know. Yeah. I mean, not so profits.
Right. Yeah. Not so profits. Sometimes I think those are exactly the projects though that like end up being really good.
Sure.
You know, like, you know, I think you've asked me before sometimes like, you know, oh, what, you know, what would you, you know, if we just retired tomorrow, like, you know, and, you know, like, consider, you know, if we were good, you know, you're financially secure for the rest of your life, like, you know, we didn't have to make another YouTube video, what would you do? I'd be like, I don't know, I'd probably just make videos, you know?
Right.
You know, it's just like, you know, and it's like, or, you know, maybe I would just like go stream or something. And it would be like there's something about like the feeling of like, well, there'd be no pressure. So I wouldn't have to like do anything like extra about it. I could just like, you know, be me. And I, you know, it's like part of me thinks like, I bet that's what would like generate like real authenticity with people.
Yeah.
And like, you know, what would they be attracted to? And it's like, well, then why don't you just do it now? It's like, yeah.
That, to me, that's what the pop is.
Right.
Like, you know, it's like, I mean, we were having a conversation with somebody last week and I was like, sometimes I'm like, is the pop just people getting to witness my therapy sessions? Like, you know?
Yeah, sometimes I think,
it's like, let's just go in and we'll just like hammer through it.
Right.
But you know, like the hope, and it was funny too last week because we were recording the first ever like Bluey episode.
Yes, we were.
I remember you got to like one point in the episode where you're like, it was just so cool because you can see like all of these like little things that like Bluey is doing is like radiating out into the world and it's like causing all of these like good things.
Yeah.
And I was like, I while we were recording, I was like, Jay, I'm like, that's the pop.
That's the
like,
pop.
That's like what we're trying to do.
Yes.
You know, like, so I don't know. It's really funny, but you are right. You know, it's like, I think probably more of like what you've just described, like the appeal of it is like the like unspoken, not so fun aspect of being a content creator is like you do need to, like, in order to continue doing it, you need to be able to like generate something.
Yeah.
So like, I think more than anything, you probably feel like the financial pressure.
And it's like, it's the pressure and it's like the feeling that like, you know, the people watching you also know that. So it's like, there's always that concern that like, it feels like everything you're doing is like performative, like even if it's not.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Like I don't tend to feel like there's that many instances where that's like what's going on. I mean, it's not like it's never a part of the conversation, but I think as you just described it, where it's like, oh, it'd be so nice to just be like authentic and just be able to say, it's like, I think more than anything, it's like, it would be the lack of that stress,
right?
Like just knowing that like the overhead is taken care of forever,
right?
Always.
Like, yes.
But that's also like the goal of, I think, I mean, you could tell me if it's otherwise, but I think, you know, most of us with our careers, like what we're
like hoping for,
there's passion involved. Like, you know, people
absolutely,
all, they
yes.
all seek they seek out the specific way to spend their life, but usually they're spending their life in some capacity, hoping that at some point in time they can stop. I think.
Yeah.
So I have no idea. But any feedback, always welcome. We got some really good feedback on the past couple of weeks of that episode. So if you have any thoughts for us, you can send it on over to popcornculturepod@gmail.com. I do read every single email that comes through the inbox. So it's always so interesting to see what people come back with, or like the ways in which like they'll have received something in a way that's so different from like what I expected, but it's like, wow, that's fascinating. So yeah, I really, really appreciate all the feedback. Also, we have our new quarterly merch officially announced. We are doing a pop socket, which I'm super excited about. So it's going to be like, I think I said this maybe in last week, I've been like reserving a usage of a pop socket.
Yeah.
For this occasion. I'm like, now it's happening.
Now is the time. I'm the pop socket.
Yeah. I'm into it. So if you want to check that out, you can do so at patreon.com/popcornculture. Link in the show notes and in the description and all of the places and all the things. But otherwise, until next time,
pop pop.
Today's episode was edited by Isabel Chrisley. Vaishon Brandon does our art. Catherine Stein is our production manager, and the show is hosted by me and Jonathan Carlin.